Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Hello, everyone. Happy Thursday, and welcome to Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia. Yay! All right, Sydney. Welcome to the Raw Bar. Thank you so much for hanging with me today. And of all days, your birthday. I love it. Thank you so much.
I'm 25 now.
Oh, yay! 25 is a good year. You can now rent a car. Not any problems if you wanted. But also, it's just a good time. Ooh, let me actually turn on my Do Not Disturb, because sometimes people are like, hey, and I'm like, nope. I'm busy hanging out with a friend. All right. So, Sydney, let me read your bio and then we'll get started. Cool? Awesome. All right. So, Sydney Ray Chin, pronouns they and she, is a queer, polyamorous, non-monogamy sex educator and multifaceted creative based in what is colonially known as Philadelphia. Their IG handle, Sexy Soup Dumplings, is a hub for educational content and peer support geared towards non-monogamous people of color. Her degree in media arts production from Emerson College has impacted how they create educational content with unpacking media, looking at social norms through a non-monogamy lens, and more. So good. So good. There's so much happening. How else are you celebrating your birthday?
I am going to omakase later tonight with my anchor partner, so I'm looking forward to that. Because I've never had it before, and, like, I love sushi. Okay, I just love raw fish, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, and sushi is pretty great.
It is pretty great.
Yeah. That's so fun. Aw. I love that. I love that you're going to be spending your birthday just having some delicious feasts. Because that's really, that's that Taurus life. I know this.
True.
Food I know is this always well.
Our, like, food is our thing.
Food is our thing. Oh man, yeah. It was definitely when it was my birthday. I was like, okay, we just got to make sure that, like, I eat during the day. That will, or not even during the day. Just like in general, like, I need to have the treats that make me happy. Otherwise, it's like, what even is this birthday if I haven't had the things that I want to eat?
That's so true.
All right. So, well, let's get into some of the questions that I have for you. And being that we are both in this, in the sexuality field, what is your sex ed origin story?
So it wasn't something that I thought that I was going to go into, what's it called? Film after college. Yes. Cause I went to film school. I went to Emerson. I'm sure you know where that is. And so afterwards I had just been like, I think it was, like, in therapy. So I had started therapy because I'm a survivor of sexual and intimate partner violence. And through that, my therapist introduced me to oracle cards and tarot cards. So I was like, ooh, okay, cool. And before that, I was doing, like, marketing and stuff, which, like, I'm definitely good at. I grew my following and grew my whole Instagram community without paid marketing. So
yeah,
it's pretty good. And so right. I thought I would do that because, like, I'm good at it. Okay, cool. That makes money. And then I realized, no, I don't. So I got laid off at the beginning of the pandemic from, like, an internship, whatever, that was promising me, like, a part-time contractor role at the end of it. Because she allegedly had not enough money, but I'm not sure. Anyway, anyways, so then after that, I started looking into sex ed and wanted to combine holistic healing and sex ed. And so I took a Reiki course. And then after that, I started, like, doing survivorship work. That's what I was doing a lot last year, and now I've moved away from that into non-monogamy work. And it was something that I did so that I can empower other people who had similar stories, because I feel like not a lot of Asian, non-men, non-binary people, anyone who's not as this, as like anyone who's seen or perceived as a woman, especially that's Asian, I feel like we don't get to talk about our survivorship stories much, either in community and outside of community, because people are like, oh, but like, it's that whole stereotype, especially for people who are perceived as Asian women. Oh my God, you're sexual. That's like it. Right. When I'm just like, it's more complicated than that.
Oof.
So that's how I got started into sex ed, because it was survivorship work and I really found strength in that. But then some part way through it, like, I was just like, this is not working anymore. This is draining. Like, survivorship work is really draining. And props to people who can do it, but also it's just really white, too. So I'm just like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a part of me that's like, is it because, like, for me specifically, is it because I'm in the Northeast? But also, is it, we're totally going to get into this, too. And we can get into it now if you want to. It's definitely not as diverse as I would like it to be up here in Boston.
Oh yeah, I remember Boston. Cold and really white.
Yeah. And not just because it snows.
Yeah, no, the people. Not just
and like there, but and also, is it an issue that really gets brought up a lot in the Asian community, right? I feel like last year there was a lot of talks about mental health, which was fantastic and so needed and still needed. And yet, yeah, I don't see a lot of like Asian survivors of sexual assault out there. Like being very, well, there are the really public ones now. Oh my God, why are all the names? Amanda Nguyen, she's doing amazing, but I'm not seeing it on the ground.
Yeah, on the ground. Like Chanel Miller. Who I really look up to. Those are like people who are like super public figures and they're not necessarily always on the ground. From what I know, Chanel is more on the ground because she's like very community oriented from what I can see on her IG. But yeah, there's not a lot of us on the ground in different communities. And when you talk about survivorship, I feel like it's very taboo in the Asian communities, especially if no one wants to talk about it. But everyone knows it's an issue because we all know someone.
Right. Statistically speaking, we definitely know someone. Like, the just statistics alone, I feel like, is enough reason to admit, almost. Mm-hmm. So let me actually ask the second part of this, my first question, because I think it's related to this. What is it like to explain what you do and, like, your experiences to your family and friends? If you
have to my friends, it's easier, obviously. But to my family, I'm just like, how do I explain this? Every time I'm just like, how do I explain that I do sex education? Because also, I'm sure they don't want to think about it either. And that they probably think, like, the typical, I feel like, media representation of sex ed is, like, showing people anatomy. But I'm like, it's much more than that.
It really is. And I feel like so many people miss a lot. We're seeing that right now, too, in a lot of the rhetoric. It's like, oh, why would you want to teach your kids about these things, are too young, blah blah blah. And it's just, sex ed is so much more. No one's teaching toddlers that a penis goes into a vagina.
It's not like toddlers are being taught oral sex or something,
right? There's not that happening, and a lot of people like to pretend that it is. And it's just, no, it's because you also failed sex ed, or sex ed failed you, both. And and there's actually much more to it than that, but it's just, it's that's just the nature of the beast these days, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I feel like when I try to explain to my parents or something, they're just like, what? They don't get it. Because they never had it. Also, mm-hmm. like, the reason that I do it is because I never had good sex ed. Yeah. And it wasn't until after going through sexual and intimate partner violence that I, like, learned about consent, which I'm just like, that's just a fucked up bad way to learn about consent.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to learn after the fact? Instead, you should learn so that you can know how to, like, not protect yourself, but know your boundaries.
And I think part of it, too, I think, is, and I was listening to, there was an episode of Code Switch that talked about, actually, the Filipino community, which I was, like, very excited about. And there's a lot of the ideas, and this isn't necessarily specific to Asian communities, like a lot of communities of color have this sort of same
deal,
sense of community, right? But that one's actions and one's like decisions affect the rest of the community. Like it's very much community and like family oriented versus the like U.S. very individual, pull you up by your bootstraps kind of thing. Do you think that's part of it for you, or for at least for your family?
Yeah, at least for my family, like, it's definitely part of it. And also, my parents didn't grow up with sex ed, so it's just, like, a foreign thing to them. They mm-hmm. support me, but they don't ask about it, which I'm like, that's fine. I'd rather you not ask about it sometimes. And also trying to broach non-monogamy with them, I'm just like, how do I even explain this? Because then I'll have to explain my personal relationships. And then there's that whole notion like, oh, they think that I might be cheating on my partner. And I'm just like, no, everyone literally knows what's going on. So it's not cheating.
But I also feel like in a lot of older, like, I feel like I've heard stories, even in the Philippines, like pre-colonialism, there was definitely non-monogamy going on, right?
Yeah,
obviously in different ways and that sort of thing, but I mean, and really, like, even post-colonialism, like, I remember hearing a story of my grandmother, like, learning about my grandfather's mistress and basically going up to her and being like, all right, since you're going to be here, you're coming to church with us, which is a little bit like, I'm sure it was meant to be a guilt trip, but she knew and she wasn't going to be like, how dare you to my man and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. You know,
she was like,
oh, this is it.
Yeah.
Like with my family, my dad's dad had a first wife and then he was widowed. And then my grandma is his second wife, but no one talks about that. Everyone knows in the family, but no one talks about it. And then my grandma's, oh, his first family is not our family. But I'm like, no, these are literally my cousins. What the fuck are you saying? These are my cousins. What the heck?
Really? Oh.
Which is interesting, but also like my like family, especially on that side, is like super Catholic, like super Roman Catholic, and like very much like one man should be with one woman, this is how it should be. And I'm just like, no, y'all, that even counts as non-monogamy because you still love the other person who passed away, but you still love someone else. I'm just like, that's literally non-monogamy in a way. Maybe not the way that people think it is, but it can definitely count if you see it that way.
That's true. That's a good point. Is that, would you say that's how you would be explaining? Let's back it up. I'm like losing track of my questions here because we're getting into conversation. Let me actually get to that question. When it comes to non-monogamy with people of color, what kind of assumptions do you think people make and what do they get wrong?
I feel like a lot of white people especially assume that people of color aren't non-monogamous, which I'm just like, history books? Anyone? Also, like, the fact that there were, like, I know in China, I don't know that much about Chinese history, but, like, I know that there were concubines and shit. I'm just like, isn't that non-monogamy? Isn't that just non-monogamy? Maybe not in the way that we think of it, but, like, it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, the misconceptions still of sexual stereotypes, like, show up in non-monogamous communities, and especially like like on dating apps and stuff, because I feel like a lot of people assume that I'm there for the sex, which I'm like, yeah, but also not really, not all the time. And also, I don't know, sometimes I want to get to know someone first before I like have sex with them. And I think that's also like a stereotype of people who are perceived as Asian women, that we're like super hypersexual and all that. And I'm just like, no, read my bio, people.
Yeah, I think the dating world is a whole mess unto itself, for sure. Do you think that there are any misconceptions among other people of color about it?
I think a lot of people who grew up in like religious communities who are people of color are like, think it's blasphemy, or like, are like, what? Like, I don't get this. And I think that it's like, I think that's the biggest misconception. They're like, how does this work? I don't get how this works. And I'm just like, it's not that deep, you guys. It's really not that deep, y'all. It's people being in communication with other people that they're dating.
That breaks it down really simply.
Yeah, I and feel it's like partnerships, and you're in communication about your other partnerships with your partners.
I feel like a lot of people come up with the, oh, wouldn't you get jealous? Like, I feel like that's one of the questions that comes up a lot. Yeah, I don't know. I, speaking personally, I have to admit that, like, I've never been in a non-monogamous relationship. All my relationships have been monogamous. Mm-hmm. And, like, only really recently, in the past, I want to say I've known that it has existed, and that like it's a completely functioning like form of relationship style for at least 12, 15 years. But I haven't really, I was like, okay, a relationship style that exists. Mm-hmm. And then I never really fully got to understand it more and ask more questions until maybe in the past 5 years. So definitely I'd have to say too, and admit that like I also was one of the people who was like, I think I'd just be like too jealous.
Yeah, that's what I hear a lot from people, and I'm just like, yeah, but jealousy comes up in monogamous relationships too.
Yeah, no, like in polyamorous relationships, you mean?
Oh, both in monogamous and polyamorous relationships, I feel like jealousy can come up just in like very different contexts, if that makes sense. Whereas, okay, if you're dating other part, like usually it's an insecurity. That's what I realized with my own non-monogamy, that, oh, if I'm jealous, it's because I'm insecure or have trauma around.
Is it something that you usually end up having to address with everybody involved?
Yeah, it's something that I have to address with either the partner that I have jealousy around, whatever's happening in that relationship or connection, or just everyone. And I think that's, and I think that's like the beauty of polyamory, is that you get to talk about these things. Because when I was monogamous, I didn't get to talk about any of this, really, because so much of culture is mononormative. And I feel, I don't know, you just miss a lot of these things that you wouldn't, you don't necessarily talk about the same things in monogamy that you do in polyamory.
Examples?
So like, I feel like when I was monogamously dating, I didn't really talk about jealousy with my... And then in non-monogamy, I feel like the most popular thing is talking about jealousy amongst, like, non-monogamous people that I know. And then, like, I feel like, yeah, in both monogamous and non-monogamous relationships, you definitely need top-tier communication skills. But I think that, especially when you have more partners, like, you need to really know how to communicate and know also what you're feeling. And I think that goes for monogamous relationships too, but in a different way. You know how you're feeling about this one person that you're in a relationship with, versus with non-monogamy, it's like you have to know how you feel with different people and what that looks like and how it can look different, and then what's healthy and not healthy.
Yeah, I feel like I hear a lot about like toxic monogamy, which is so awful. That's so, and once I started to learn more about what that was and what that meant, just the things that people feel like they have to manipulate someone into like staying in a relationship with them is like such a weird
thing.
Like, it's, yeah, to realize that that's such a major part of monogamous culture. It's like, no, just stay with me. We have to stay together forever. So much pressure. So much pressure put on each person, essentially. Well, I'm going to have some water, too.
Yeah, and, like, I think when I don't think I could ever be monogamous. I know for some people that like polyamory is a lifestyle slash more of a choice, but for me, it's more of my identity.
Yeah.
And it's like, I could never imagine being monogamous again. I'm just like, yeah, like I can be like polyamorous and have a long distance partner and a partner that I live with, but like, I'm not ever going to be monogamous because fuck that. For myself, I'm just like, that does not work. I was so unhappy.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's just some people just work better in those, in that style. Cool. More power to everybody. Let them be who they are, right? Do you think there's like a hard truth about non-monogamy that you think people aren't ready to hear, but you're just like, bitch, it's time.
I'm trying to think.
Sure. I'm going to have a bite. Well, you think y'all be jealous of our dumplings right now?
I think a hard truth is that, like, that people don't want to hear that there's grief in breakups when they're polyamorous breakups too. I feel like people don't know that until they go through it. Because I'm currently going through a polyamorous breakup with someone that I don't live with and an ex-partner, and that was like the last few weeks have been really rough, like going through that. Because it's just, okay, like, it, the whole breakup was very fucked up. And I talk about it on another podcast that I was just on, Polly Page's Polyamorous Breakup Podcast. Yeah, it was, like, you can, I feel like a hard truth is, like, simultaneously feeling grief and joy. And I feel like a lot of people are just like, what? How can you feel both at the same time? And I'm like, yeah, because I'm grieving for this partnership that I had. But also I'm really, like, happy and joyful to be with my anchor partner and for him to be a big part of my life and like for us to have all these future plans, but it still hurts when a breakup happens because breakups always fucking hurt.
That's so interesting. I actually don't think I've ever heard that like people would just assume that you're like, okay, whatever, next. When being polyamorous isn't just, you're not just dating. You're not just dating, you're like going out and forming bonds with people. People really don't seem to get that sometimes. I'm sorry that you were going through some difficult times in the past weeks, but it sounds like there's a lot to look forward to as well.
Yeah, being ghosted was not fun for sure.
Ugh, rude.
I know. And I was trying to ask for a conversation too, and I was like, come on, you don't have to ghost me and then be on the internet in common groups saying DMs are open and just, why don't you clean up the mess first and then maybe you should say that.
Ew.
Yeah.
Red flag.
Yeah. And I was talking to my other polyamorous friends and they were like, that's not even how you do hierarchical polyamory if that's what they wanted to do.
Is that what they had claimed?
No. But it was something that it seemed was on their mind to make one person a bigger part of their life, which is fine. But I'm just like, you have to communicate that if that's the case.
Right.
You can't just like say, oh, we'll change the dynamic and not talk to me for 2 weeks. Because I'm just like,
Go ahead.
Because it's just communicate. Just please communicate. It's not that hard.
Especially if you've been in relationship for a while.
Yeah, and it was like 6 months, so I'm just like, could you have communicated this? Because this feels awful.
Can you explain a little bit more what hierarchical polyamory is?
So hierarchical polyamory, to my understanding, is like when someone is primaried. So usually the person that they live with, married, whatever, is primaried, and there's veto power, not always. But like sometimes I know that some people veto power, like whoever gets to date whomever.
Oh, interesting.
Which I personally don't like because that just makes me feel very icky. Mm. And also I'm like, that does not work for me as a survivor. So I do non-hierarchical where everyone's on like similar planes, but I'm more logistically linked to my anchor partner who I live with. So nesting partner too. And that's, I feel like there's different expectations for different types of relationships. And I feel like with hierarchical, from my understanding, it's a lot of like prioritization of one partner over other partners, which is fine if that works for you, but that doesn't work for me if someone's going to date me.
Right. Now, that actually brings up a really interesting question for me, which is it possible, is it just a little more complicated to, because obviously like different people within a relationship might have different ways of practicing polyamory, right? Do you think that, is it possible for that to work, the different styles altogether, or is it better when it's not better? Is it just like easier?
I think it would be possible if people want to work towards that, and if it doesn't like trigger people's trauma, because for me, that hierarchical polyamory triggered my own trauma. And in this situation that I was in with my ex, they were prioritizing white people over me, and I already have trauma from past relationships with like specifically like white femmes and being prioritized over them in the past. So I'm just like, that didn't work for me. And I was like, this dynamic's not working for me. Like, I can't do this because this is, I feel like it can work if y'all both understand your boundaries and the different dynamics. But if you don't, then I feel like it wouldn't necessarily work. Or it would be really hard and not feel great maybe for either party.
And that generally just feels icky, what you're describing.
Yeah, it was not. Yeah, looking back, I'm just like, okay, I'm glad I'm out of this relationship.
Yeah, dating and relationships. There's just so much involved. And I feel like, people were just like willing to have more, or like maybe it's partially being willing to and partially having the like tools be able to communicate. I can speak personally, and I'm sure that, I hope my partner doesn't mind, but like he very much like needs to think very long and hard about what he's going to say. And I'm like, I'm just going to talk straight from my brain. Fine. And so like, I've had to learn to be like really patient with him. And also he just, in his previous relationships, he didn't have the opportunities to have conversations the way that I have conversations in a really open fashion. And so, I feel like it's partially the tools.
And if you don't have a good toolbox or don't have a toolbox, it's really hard. Because I was in a monogamous relationship like in 2019, and that was so different because A, neither of us had the toolbox. It was just like B, a really fucked up relationship. And C, he wasn't also great about his emotion, or wasn't forthcoming about his emotions. And I'm just like, I can't guess. I can't read your mind, dude.
You're like, if I could have. Yeah.
So like,
oh, man.
Yeah. And I feel like with that, when I tried non-monogamy in that way, like it was fine, but there was still like that monogamous guilt coming up. And also because of that whole dynamic, he wanted me to only be with like partners that he approved with, or like people that he approved of. It was weird because I felt like I couldn't date other men, or not date, but hook up with men. Because I feel like that would have made him uncomfortable. So like, there's definitely some people that use non-monogamy in that way. It was like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I can see that, and how that would make you not feel good being in a hierarchical style of polyamory. Ooh. Yeah. My goodness. Let me actually transition to like how we met each other.
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back. Do you work at or attend a college or university? Are you looking to feature a sex educator who can speak to the students about a variety of sexuality topics? Well, your favorite mermaid goddess sex educator is here to work with you and administrators to provide an entertaining and educational experience. I love working with college students, especially because I can keep it real while providing accurate sexual health information. Topics range from pleasure anatomy to pleasure tools to pleasurable permission, a pleasure-centered workshop about consent. I can help make sure that the student population can be better equipped humans as they explore the world beyond their homes. To book a workshop with me, head on over to goddesscecilia.com. That's GoddessCecilia.com and fill out the form on the contact page.
You and I really connected last year after
a very difficult
year.
Yeah, that was not fun last March. Oh my God.
Very difficult day in March. I want to say February? End of January even was when, what's her face? I don't really want to say her name. Came out with that music video.
Oh yeah, that white woman. That Karen.
Oh, the worst, y'all, the worst. And I'll be a little more specific. She basically created a music video in which she used Asian stereotypes to talk about having like strong vagina muscles.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. And on top of that, it was like the second year of COVID. Mm-hmm. And then March, the shootings happened Atlanta.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Dallas and I'm just like, no, that's this year.
That's this year. Oof. I know. It's still, So there was just a lot of what I like to say, like both very personal, physical and professional, like assaults on the Asian community. And that helped me to really feel like, okay, like we're here. Like, where are we? Because this person cannot be representing us in the field that we're in. So no, absolutely not. And now we're in, oh my God, it's titled so many different things around the country, but it's Asian American, South Asian, Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Yeah. It's a lot of different things. And sometimes I never know which acronym to use. I'm just like, yeah,
all of them, know, just throw them all in,
all the acronyms. And so we connected last year because we were in a similar Mighty Networks group. Mm-hmm. And so that instance of anti-Asian violence and obviously very white supremacist violence happened, and then we connected on a thread, and Erica Smith offered us her Instagram space to go live with her. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, that was like, it was fun. It was good. It was healing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if fun is the right word, but yeah. And a lot of more people came through than I thought would to support us both. Like, I know that I got the biggest tips that weekend and I was like, holy shit, I've never been tipped that much.
Same. I was like, honored, honestly, because it was so much emotional labor to be talking about such a difficult topic. And at that time, we both live in like the East Coast, and there's so many stories that just keep popping up to this day. Especially, I feel like I hear a lot about what's happening in New York, and I don't know if it's because this is where I am, if that's just what's getting filtered through my feed, or if it's just like higher rates over here, which I don't know if that's true. But a year later, there's definitely attacks still happening. But do you think that the conversation, at least, do you think that there's been any improvement?
No. Honestly, no. I wish I could say yes. We all wish we could say yes, but like, I feel like no, because there was that other shooting that happened in Dallas at Korean hair salons.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the fuck? We can't even be safe in our own like little enclave spaces. The hell? And I feel like nothing has changed and it's kind of moved on because like trauma response. And I get that as someone who's a survivor, but also if you don't address it, it's just going to fester.
Definitely. I feel like it was a moment and like it was very easily pushed aside for the next thing in a way. We know for a fact that what's her face was not apologetic for it at all, though her video got taken down and like all that stuff. She was not apologetic about it. Do you think that, like, what, if anything, could the larger, like, non-Asian sex ed and sex positive community do to help move something, to help move the needle a little bit, or like help, because I feel like there's still a lot of the stereotypes that are into play here and there. There are still people out there that, for sure, she's still in business, this lady. I don't know, because I don't think I'm pretty sure I'm blocked, but once in a while I'll get someone like randomly commenting on a post, like old posts, and then all of a sudden they start talking about her, and I'm just like, no one's talking about her anymore. Like, why are you here?
I also feel like a lot of the white sex ed community just wants to move on, and I'm just like, I can't move on if this is like still actively happening to people who look like me, and like being worried about being harassed on the subway when I dress like, especially as a non-binary person, when I dress really femme and can be perceived as a woman, like, especially today, like, I'm wearing a dress with, like, my titties out, which is awesome, but also just, oh, God, sometimes I worry about being harassed, and I don't love that feeling. And I feel like a lot of the non-Asian sex ed community that is not people of color, because I feel like a lot of us POCs, we all just stick together, like, all of those who are like impacted by not exactly the same experience, but similar experiences in their own way. Like, we all just like band together. But for like the white educators out there, I feel like a lot of them are just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Just moving on with their lives. And I just wish they like would take time to allow us to take over their platforms and pay us. Because I know that a lot of white educators, I feel like, get paid way more than the educators of color that I know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I feel like there isn't the same level of, hey, here are the Asian sex educators that you should be paying attention to. I'll do it. I'm planning on doing that. And I have done that. But like, I would love to see more white sex educators also do some of the lifting up of those of us who are in the field with them.
And also, if you have gigs that are centered around, like, Asian sexuality, don't take them. Just hand them off to someone who is part of that community, whether they're, like, whether it's a South Asian community or, like, an East Asian or, like, Southeast Asian, whatever. Hand it off to someone who is actually part of the community rather than, I don't know. And that's, like, also, and I think there's also, like, problems with that, because even in the Asian communities, when you try to do sex ed, they want you to have all the credentials, and I'm just like, not to be certified to be a good sex educator, and you don't have to have a PhD to be a good sex educator. And I feel like people don't, and I feel like there's a lot of elitism in Asian and Asian American communities, which just
I know, I feel like it is such a funny thing, because there is general, I don't know about generally, within the sex ed community, within the sex ed field, I feel like there's an understanding that like there's a variety of ways to get into the field and the industry, right? And it doesn't, not everyone has to have a college education, not everyone has to have a degree or a certification. And then within the Asian community, there is such an like upholding of the academic, or like just academia, right? Like there's an upholding of academia. There's an upholding of what is deemed as professional.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do those things, how can we like
meld them together?
Bring them together. Yeah. How can we build that bridge of understanding where it's like, you don't, there's so like, so certainly being involved, like taking some workshops, whatever, but.
Yeah. Also, so last year I like, put myself out for a gig at a local Asian American nonprofit, and they like chose someone with a PhD in science and let their students teach And then the students were asking me, how do you facilitate this space? And I'm just like, y'all, if they have to ask me that, that means that you shouldn't have hired them.
Yikes.
Ugh. And they asked me that individually without seeing everyone. So I'm just like, and then I was like, no, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I'm busy. I'm all of a sudden busy.
Yeah, you're not getting paid for that. So,
and also, I'm not doing free labor for people who should have just given the gig to someone who actually knew what the fuck they're talking about.
There's that whole piece.
Yeah. So it was really sad. So I get that there's liabilities, but also I'm just like, a lot of sex educators don't necessarily have all those degrees, but they're in community with people who keep them accountable. Like,
yeah, but I don't think that, I think the misunderstanding is that having a degree or having a certification is somehow going to keep you accountable.
Yeah. Also, I think the misconception is that people who have degrees can hold space when that's not always true, that I've heard.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Yeah. We also know that, like, how many doctors aren't well versed in sex ed. So
make it make sense.
Please. Make it make sense. Yeah. There's so much more nuance to it. And I think that people a lot of time miss out on that because they're, oh, you have a degree, you have a certification, but that doesn't actually guarantee. And it doesn't, yeah, I feel like liability specifically, people are still going to fuck up and the certifying body is not going to hold them accountable necessarily.
Yeah. And also I had done a lot of workshops and I had other nonprofits hire me. So I'm just like, look, I have a track record. You can ask these people who hired me. So that stung a lot. But now I'm just like, if y'all are not going to fuck with me in that way, then just don't reach out again. Because no, I'm not doing free labor for like undergrads. No, thank you.
College level?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Also, just the fact that you even had to ask me how to hold space means that you should not be holding the space in the first place.
Ooh, that's so awkward. That's so awkward. I actually recently saw a post of yours where you mentioned that you were getting into the food restaurant industry, which obviously like makes my Taurus heart go a flutter, and that you hinted at connecting your like sex ed work with that, if I remember correctly. Are you able to talk about that a little more?
I can give a little hint because I'm still figuring it out.
I love it though.
So with non-monogamy, I realized there's like a gap specifically for like, I feel like education through food and like storytelling through food. So that's something like I'm envisioning like a 9-course meal or whatever and talking about polyamory or like the history of like non-monogamy in like China. I don't know what yet, but that's what I can imagine talking about and connecting that through like dishes and like conceptualized dishes because I'm very into that. I watch a lot of MasterChef, so I'm very into the whole plate and thing. And then on another side, I want to do catering, specifically catered towards like certain groups of people. So like kink munches, because I feel like people just go to restaurants, but I'm like, wait, why can't you just have a sex educator who cooks food? Sorry. Yeah. And even though I'm not like a kink educator, I feel like, okay, that would just be nice where I'm like not going to judge you and just make sure your party's all good.
Or you can cater like play parties.
Exactly. And
that's so cute.
Also like polycule, like the first time when like polycules meet for the first time, I feel like catering that brunch or something or like lunch or whatever would be so cute to play things and like whatnot. And then also like micro weddings, because there's not a lot of like polyamorous affirming wedding vendors, because most people, I feel like traditional wedding vendors, from what I know, are just like, what? How? And I'm just like, micro weddings are cute. Weddings are cute. I like the aesthetics.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about doing that, something like that. I'm not really sure yet, but those are the possibilities floating around in my head.
That's so cute. I love it. I think that that's something that a lot of people I've never heard of, for sure. And yeah, I feel like it helps to serve the community. And there's like something about that just feels very nourishing and pleasing in all the ways, like both give and take of that.
And also just especially with that 9-course menu or whatever course menu, I think it would be cool to talk about education alongside the dishes and like eating together and learning together. Because I feel like you learn a lot from conversations with friends. So it's like conversing with your friend who knows all the sex ed stuff.
Aww, I love that. I really love that. I say, go for it. Make it happen. Why the hell not? You put it out into the universe now?
Yeah, now I'm just like cooking it up a little more and like figuring out what that would look like. But that's like what I'm envisioning so far.
I love it. I love that. All right. I do have one final question. What are you currently finding pleasure in right now or in the general moment or in the past couple of days?
I think I found a lot of pleasure in like finding new clothing for myself. So like lately I've been like going through a gender identity transformation and really realizing that, okay, I'm a trans person. I know that I don't want to be on T right now, but I know that I want to bind and try that. So I'm going to be trying that soon. And I think finding like things and pieces that make me feel good and euphoric. Like I'm wearing a whole like baby doll, like picnic-y cottagecore dress. And I'm like, oh, I like this. And then my hair obviously is very like androgynous femme, which I'm loving. And I think I'm finding pleasure in finding new things that feel good for myself and new hobbies. And like, also just like, I'm finding pleasure in like going outside again, because being stuck in the house with COVID was, I was going a little bit stir crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that you're at the like other side of it.
Oh yeah, I'm glad too.
Are you finding that you're having any lingering symptoms?
Yeah.
Lingering like feelings?
So like post-COVID fog, like I've had a little bit of that, which is just, that's not fun. I already have CPTSD, so it makes that CPTSD memory not as great. It already isn't great, but that, and then like random joint pain, like randomly out of nowhere. And then sometimes headaches. I'm glad I'm all better now for the most part.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm glad it happened before your birthday and that you're able to go and continue to enjoy the day. So other than your dress that you're currently wearing, is there something else that you have found that you're like, oh my gosh, I love this thing so much as far as like clothing?
Oh, let me think. Okay, so I have stolen my anchor partner's clothes because so he like had a lot. And then there were stuff that he outgrew. So I have this pair of joggers that he gave me. And they're like very goth and have those skater like zippers. And I find them comfortable because I'm like, oh, they just look good with a black tank top. And like I can dress it up or dress it down and like, dress it femme or dress it very masked. So I like that piece of clothing and I find pleasure in it because I can do so much with it.
I love it. A multifunctional piece.
Exactly.
So good. All right. I am trying to pay attention to the time. I would love to hear, or if you are down for it, let people know how they can like find you.
My IG is Sexy Soup Dumplings. I have a milkshake link in my bio. So nice. I also have coffee and then Venmo. If you want to Venmo me, it's my birthday today, so please.
That's right.
My Venmo is Sydney, uppercase SYDNEY, underscore RAE. And I also have Cash App, which is the $ symbol, DNEYRAECHIN. So feel free to send me some love there. Love. And then also you can book a one-on-one session if that's interested to you. And I also have on my links, a link to my coffee replay shop that has replays from $5 to $25.
Nice. Nice. Oh, Sydney, I'm so glad that we got to do this.
Me too. I've been looking forward to this. And also, we got to collab more once I figure out my schedule.
Yes, we definitely do. I'm down to do some collab that also involves more food. You know it.
Yeah. Oh my God. We should try to collab with a company to let us do a mukbang.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Talking about that.
Oh, yeah. I'll touch base about that, but that would be fun.
That would be fun. Oh, my gosh. All right, folks. Thank you so much again for joining me. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
For those of you who watched live, thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who are catching this afterwards, either in the replay or in the podcast version, thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week on the Raw Bar.
All right. Bye.
Bye, Sydney. Happy birthday.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. Make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbarpod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me, and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.